Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, October 1st, 2019. Officially Halloween season, regardless of what decorations in store since August may have told you. And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two wonderful panelists. I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
I'm glad you're with me. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Yeah, Kelly.
All right. That's going to be my default text message tone from now on. Thank you for that, Brian. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
The first thing I want to do today is briefly let you all know that if you have played any of Zynga's games, which would be anything that ends in with friends, and I don't remember what their other ones are. I just remember the with friends ones.
I played Baggle with Friends.
Yes, Baggle with Friends.
Which used to be Word Streak with Friends, which was Scramble with Friends.
Yes.
But then eventually they just licensed Baggle.
Yes. Just wrote the check to call it Baggle. There's Words with Friends. There's Baggle with Friends. There's a number of them. And anyway, if you gave them a fake email address, then that means that you didn't get the message from them that there is possibly a data breach and they're trying to do everything to keep your account safe, but you may want to log in and change a password or what have you. So today in data breaches, it is Zynga. So, yes, Brian?
Yeah, good stuff, right? 218
yes.
million accounts.
That is so many people.
Right? Did I get that number right?
That sounds right.
I think that's what Andrew wrote.
I think so. We don't have a lot to discuss. 218 million. How much?
218 million. So go change your passwords, folks.
Yes, go change your passwords. Even if you don't play Zynga games, go pick a different account and change that password instead. It's just a good idea to do that once in a while.
Yeah, there you go.
It's just every day is change a couple of passwords day. Just remember that. Keep change your password day in your heart all year long. And with that, we're going to move on to a slightly different topic. And John, this was something you brought up that is near and dear to my heart, as I told you guys yesterday, because I have some of the memorabilia from this in particular hanging in my office.
Yes, you do.
As do you.
As do I. Quite different in texture, though. Although I do wish I had the Kermit one.
Yeah, that's very dear to me. So what we're talking about is the Think Different campaign.
Yeah, the other day at Cult of Mac, Luke Dormo wrote a really nice article about reminiscing that the Think Different campaign was launched by Apple September 28th, 1997. So it's 22 years old. No special significance to the 22 years, but it's always great to reminisce about that time and the atmosphere around Apple. I was working for Apple, went to work for them in the summer of 2000. And it was an idyllic time. It was a fabulous campaign. Part of it was written by Ken Segal, as we know, who writes the current blog at the Observatory. We often quote him at Particle Debris, a great marketer. The thing that struck me about Luke Dormo's article was that even though it was a very nice article, everything about Think Different has to be put into the context, of the PC atmosphere at the time. Mm-hmm. The PC world was crushing the spirits of people. They were doofuses. They were living in the past. Microsoft products were uninspiring. And Apple decided that the PC world was boring and dull and status quo-ish. And even though Apple hadn't really resurged yet, and Steve Jobs was adamant about not trying to fake his way through this process of coming back, it helped to emphasize the fact what Apple was trying to do. And this Think Different campaign focused on the atmosphere and the spirit of Apple, trying to look forward, trying to cater to people who were brilliant and creators and people who wanted to change the world for the better. And Apple giving them the tools to do that. And that inspiration, that feeling, that emotion that you got out of the Think Different campaign inspired you not only to embrace Apple computers, but to celebrate yourself and your own creativity and what you could do with Apple products. It was a heady time.
Mm-hmm. And this was, this is a big deal, relatively, because this was one of the first things that the company did after Steve Jobs returned, because this was before we got the iMac, which was like the first thing that came out under his return when he came back to Apple.
Ken Segal also named the iMac.
Who?
Ken Segal.
Oh, Ken Segal. Yeah. So this is, so just for context, this was the first thing Apple did sort of publicly after Steve Jobs returned.
Interesting was a story at Wikipedia about this, where there was a meeting and some executives were talking about a new ad campaign, and most of them wanted to announce we're back. And Steve Jobs was the only one in the room who said, no, we're not back yet.
Yeah.
So, he's right.
Yeah. At that point, they were not. Yeah.
And you have to understand the problem before you can start dealing with it. And that's what was great about Steve Jobs. He could cut through the nonsense, mm-hmm. and get to the meat of the matter and address it quantitatively and logically, and yeah. burst people's balloons of illusion and self-pretense.
Yep. Yeah. And so, John, so first of all, we should point out that the Think Different campaign, in its original form, is not what we saw on TV, right?
Like, that I don't remember.
Well, the narration is a little different in the TV version than what it was originally going to be.
You're talking about the
I'm talking about having Richard Dreyfuss do it instead
versus
of
Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, for a while, Jobs thought he was going to do the narration, but then his cooler part of him prevailed, and he realized that Dreyfuss was the better voice.
I don't know. As a voice, maybe, sure, but to me, I think having Steve himself do it was a really smart move. And in fact, he did do it. That's just not the version that aired, but it does exist. Right. You can find it. Right. It did resurge in popularity.
Yeah, but you know, you're listening to that, and I'm going to project a whole lot onto you, Kelly. You're okay. Listening to that with, you know, how long has it been? Are we at 20 years yet? 22 years, right? So yeah. You're listening to that with 22 years of hero worship for yeah. Steve Jobs that didn't exist at that point. I remember very specifically when the rumors were that Steve Jobs was going to come back. I had a pretty close friend who had been an Apple customer for a Mac user for a very long time, professionally. And I remember talking to her about it. She's like, yeah, you know, I'd be careful before you start wishing that Steve Jobs came back. You know, there were a lot of problems with him when he was there before. You know, like,
that's true.
And she was not the only angsty person about the possibility of Steve Jobs returning. This is at a point where Apple was trying to buy an operating system. Like BIOS was...
Right.
was the leading contender. The Emilio was trying to fix a bunch of stuff. What was that woman from IBM who was...
trying to remember her name. It always escapes me. She was...
I think that Steve Jobs gave her short shrift. And I think she did a lot of really good things when she was at Apple. She was Apple's a CTO, I think, for a while.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name. Goodness gracious, I'm so embarrassed. But I mean, there was it was not a foregone conclusion that Steve Jobs was, you know, we didn't know yet that Steve Jobs had learned a whole bunch of stuff about like being an adult.
Oh, sure.
And managing companies and such. And when we, I think it was probably the right move to have Dreyfuss do it on the television version mm-hmm. for those who weren't necessarily already Apple fam folks.
What I always yeah. thought was interesting about this was that I was, before I went to work for Apple, I was at an aerospace company, and we had a kind of a bad attitude towards Mac OS in comparison to Windows NT and Unix. And all of us, I had a Sun workstation on my desk before that. I had a Silicon Graphics at another location, and Unix was glorious. And Mac OS was kind of outdated and funky and backwards and didn't have a lot of modern features like preemptive multitasking and reentry code. And so rather than, and Steve Jobs knew at the time that they were not ready to replace Mac OS, the traditional classic Mac OS. But what they did have control over was the hardware. And it was interesting that the iMac shipped with Mac OS 7.5 or something.
It would have been 7.6 at least.
Something along those lines.
Maybe.
And Apple made a comeback financially without the assistance of a modern operating system. That would come in a few years. It would come in March of 2001. But Steve knew they couldn't do it with software, so they had to do it with touch and feel and look and simplicity and the design of the iMac. And I always thought that was a fascinating understanding of the situation and great execution in the eyes of the consumer, because, you know, those of us who were Unix gurus had our doubts about the iMac having the older operating system on it.
Well, it doesn't even have a floppy drive. What are you supposed to do with it without a floppy drive?
Well,
what kind of fool makes a computer without a floppy drive, John? Honestly.
Well, you know, the atmosphere at that time was is that if you were a technologist, you had this sneaking suspicion because of the malaise of the PC world that Apple was looking forward, that nothing could stay the same as it was in the past. The IT managers, if they were to get their way, would still be using SCSI drives and still be using floppies. And this telegraphing by Apple with USB and with the removal of the floppy drive was all part of the Think Different campaign. We're moving you forward. We understand the future. We see the future. Come ride with us. Come share our vision of the future as we move things forward, in contrast to the old PC ways of thinking. And by the way, that's why the Lemmings commercial failed. That was the follow-on.
Brian, the thing that you said about hero worship, like, well, that, like, now listening to it, yes, but at the time, hearing that there was a version of that existed that Steve Jobs narrated to me at the time was interesting because...
But you didn't hear that at the time, did you? And that didn't come out until years and years and years later.
Yeah, when he came... Yes. But I mean, having heard it when that was a story that first surfaced was, you know, there was a version of that where it was Steve Jobs' voice instead of Richard Dreyfuss. Was partly, I don't know how many people listen to voices or recognize voices, you know, if you don't see the person speaking. So I don't know how many, I mean, I'm not sure, honestly, how many people knew immediately that that was Richard Dreyfuss. And I'm not just saying that, like, I know a lot of people who would not have been able to place him. But also, to me, it would have felt like he was announcing he was back. Like, they don't have a computer to roll out at that point. They don't have software to roll out at that point. But making sure everybody knew that he was officially there and had returned and, like, putting that out into the world seemed like it would have been a smart move at the time. Yeah, when I listen to it now, the thing I enjoy about it is sentimental because I'm a sentimental person. And so it's always nice to hear the Steve Jobs version today.
It's not just the words of Think Different. Here's to the crazy ones. It's the character, the resonance, the inflection, the maturity, the accent. All those things of the voice of Richard Dreyfuss were just perfect for the words that were written.
Yeah. And I enjoy the Richard Dreyfuss version. Like, don't get me wrong. I think it's a wonderful commercial the way it is. You know, the one that we actually got. But I do like the idea of what it would have been like if it had been Steve's voice. Because he was never a super... He was never a super public person when he came back. Like, at that point, out in the world, like, everybody who was Apple people knew him, but not everybody in the world, you know, not the way people know Tim Cook now. You know, there's a difference.
But that's the point. No one would have known who his voice was.
Right.
I understand what you're saying. I
get why they did it, and I'm not mad about it, but I like the idea of it.
That brings up an interesting point, Brian. People reminisce about the Steve Jobs days and that ad and the atmosphere, the flavor of Apple at the time, changing the world, fighting against the Goliath of the PC malaise. Apple's so successful now, it's hard to do that. And a lot of people miss it, and a lot of people say Apple's in a new phase. It's outgrown its youthful days of ambition and vision, and it's now in its mature phase, and we don't need that anymore. I think that's an interesting discussion. I don't think there's an answer, but I think it's interesting.
I also would like to build on something that you were talking about a bit ago. By the way, it's Ellen Hancock was the executive whose name I couldn't remember. Think Different campaign was the first step in pulling off what I think is one of the greatest business achievements in modern history, and an achievement that I don't think anyone gives anywhere near enough credit to Steve Jobs and his team for doing. And that was shifting the terms on which Apple was competing in the computer industry from price and megahertz to style and experience. Mm-hmm. And that of which the iMac was the first major, the iMac was the first execution of that actually happening. But the Think Different campaign was the beginning of that process. And John was talking about Microsoft being staid and you know, sucking the life out of the PC industry, but it wasn't just Microsoft. It was the entire Wintel hegemony, where all research, all R&D dollars were going into how to make these things cheaper, weren't going into new technology. The only companies that were doing any research in new technologies were Microsoft, Intel, and then Apple. And then when Apple was able to start charging proper margins for its Mac computers, margins that supported R&D into new consumer technologies, new technologies that were going into their devices. And then, of course, eventually things like iPod and the iPad, which then led to the iPhone, which then led to the iPad actually finally being created. Like, all of those things started because Apple was able to change the terms on which it competed. And
the business
world, it's a fabulous achievement.
The business world was focused on building cheaper, better PCs for business. And this was a time when not every home had a personal computer. And people were watching science fiction, they were watching Star Trek, they were dreaming of the future. They had a PC at work, and they dreamed about what they might have at home for doing things that they'd like to do, like write their next novel or communicate with friends. And the people, what Steve Jobs understood was people had a certain feeling about how they wanted to live in the future and have a personal machine that served them and help them express themselves. And the PC industry, as you said, was not focused on that aspect, which is why you went to work and you sat down at your desk and you fired up an Excel spreadsheet and you did the numbers. Yawn, yawn, yawn. And Steve tapped into that consumer mentality. The consumer had purchase authority. The consumer had a vision for a personal computer in the home that was something very different than the dreary thing they used at work.
And Think Different bought the time to start making that possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Now, Brian, do you have any of the posters or postcards or whatever they're called?
Yes.
I don't know why that was funny.
They're going to be worth some money someday. So it's like, that was, you know, probably part of my proto hoarding that I had to eventually recognize and put a stop to.
Which ones do you have?
Paraphernalia. I haven't thought about it. I've got Picasso. I've got Einstein. I've got probably four or five of them. My now ex-wife and I together had more of them. She took some of them and I took some of them when we divorced. Yeah, I don't know. I've got a few.
I've got Richard Feynman. Richard Feynman was my hero as a physics student anyway, so that was right for me.
Yeah. The first one I got, and it's been, gosh, it's been 21 years now, was Jim Henson. And not long after that, I got the Ansel Adams one, because I sort of enjoyed the idea of, like, I sort of assumed that was going to be the only Ansel Adams print that I was ever going to be able to hang in my house. And a couple of years ago, for my birthday, Mr. Kelly got me the Alfred Hitchcock one, which I love, because it's a great image. And the image in all of them is really nice. And all three of them hang in my office. So
very nice.
I get to see all of them looking very nice. And like, but honestly, my favorite, of course, is the Jim Henson one. That's the one that I'm the most excited about. And at the time, I was not a person who thought spending 35 entire dollars on a poster was a good idea. But I spent 35 entire dollars to get the Jim Henson Think Different poster. So, yeah. So when you talk about being worth some money someday, every once in a while, I go look up what those go for. And apparently it's lots more than $35. So
let's do a little check right now. When's last time you looked it up?
Yes. Live on the podcast. We're going to go see.
Let's try some sausage. Jim Henson. Is that S-E-N or S-O-N?
S-O-N.
Jim Henson, Think Different.
Yeah.
Right here. $299, $60, $200, $260, $20. That's a garbage one.
And are those 24 by 36? Because it's the poster, not the like educational set or whatever that was 11 by 17.
24 by 36 is 300. 11 by 17 is 60. 24 by 36, 200. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're worth a little more. How about Picasso? That was one of the ones I was most interested in.
Yeah. The thing I liked about most of them was I really liked the image that they chose of the person. Like, sure. in whatever the poster is. And there used to be a place, an Apple authorized reseller here in Portland that had basically all of them, but the big ones around the showroom. And so one of my favorite things about going there was just getting to go and see all of them, because there's Paloma Picasso and Lucy and Ricky. And Einstein, and like all the ones I didn't have. And so it was really neat to get to see all of those whenever I would go there for whatever it was I needed.
So first of all, I'd like to note that, as the modern lovers told us in explicit detail, that Pablo Picasso is never called a beep hole. secondly, I would like to note that the Picasso ones are not worth as much as the Jim Henson ones. Neither it seems is not seeing many Einstein ones. Those are cheaper too. Anyways, there you have it.
All right. Well, that's not enough money to make me part with it, because I do love this picture. So anyway, I hope all of you have enjoyed this trip down memory lane. If you have any of the Think Different posters, we'd like to know which ones you've got. And if there's something about the campaign that was particularly interesting to you, please share that with us. You can do so by emailing observations@macobserver.com. You can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter, or you can leave comments in the show notes. And I'd like to thank both of you for being here today. Brian, thanks so much for coming by.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for having us. Good stuff.
John, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me as well.
I'm pleased to reminisce with the both of you. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.